Okay, let me sum this up in three messages. First of all, we're saying we have to act now in order to reduce the risk of dangerous climate change. And we are putting forward very ambitious emissions reductions in the form of legally binding carbon budgets. Second, we have done a detailed assessment of the emissions reduction opportunities in the UK, and we believe that the targets we're proposing are doable. We're not pretending they're going to be easy. They will be very challenging, but with the appropriate leadership from the government, putting the policies in place, persuading people, and leading on social change and change in business culture, as I say, we think the emissions reductions can be achieved. Third thing is that we're going to have to behave differently, but let's be clear what we mean by that. If you have a loft that you haven't insulated, then the imperative will be for you to insulate it. In 10 years' time, when you're thinking about what car to buy, you ought to be thinking about, should I buy an electric car rather than a conventional one? We are not proposing things that will undermine the standard of living that we have. At the moment, we're not saying don't drive your car. We're not saying don't go on holiday. And indeed, the cost of all of the measures that we're proposing when you put them together to meet the budgets is very small relative to our national income. Possibly more importantly, very small relative to the costs of doing nothing and the consequences of climate change.
Your economic cost estimates, did that take into account the economic recession we're now entering?
I think we need to be careful when we talk about the recession, in the sense that we acknowledge there are difficult times at the moment, but we expect that those will go away over the next 2 to 3 years. And in tackling climate change, we need a strategy over the next 10, 15, and indeed 30 and 40 years. That's what we're putting forward. Now, in the context of the recession, there's some particularly useful measures that reduce emissions and save people money. That's the energy efficiency opportunities, for example, insulating your loft and your cavity walls. The more expensive things, and there we're talking about renewable electricity, renewable forms of heat, we would see the investments in those occurring over the next 3, 5, 10, and 15 years, and not necessarily this year. So the fact that there's a credit crunch and the fact that GDP is not growing as quickly as we expected, and indeed is possibly contracting this year, is not a strong argument to move away from this commitment to tackling a long-term problem.
Has the committee taken a view on whether new coal power stations should be built without carbon capture technology?
We have, and let me just take you through the thought process there. Certainly in the 2020s, we wouldn't expect to see any conventional coal generation happening here in the UK. And then if you move forward and closer to the current day, you say, well, should we then build conventional coal if we're not going to use it in the 2020s? I think the answer is we can build coal as long as it is retrofitted with CCS equipment in the 2020s. And then there's a policy question about how do you get the kind of commitment you need from investors that they will actually retrofit the conventional coal plant with CCS. What we say is the principle is clear. Anybody investing has to do so with the clear expectation that they will retrofit. There's a number of policy options that can implement that expectation.
Why didn't the committee go a bit further and condemn the government's plans to expand aviation, particularly Heathrow Airport?
There is a specific set of questions that we are asked to consider under the Climate Change Act, and Heathrow is not one of them. We are asked to think about the general issue of aviation. On that, we do have a position. We acknowledge the importance of aviation emissions and also the importance of controlling them. And for us, the key point at the moment is that aviation is coming into the EU ETS and will be capped, so that if emissions are not reduced within aviation itself, then there will be emissions reductions in other sectors to account for that.
Investment in renewables will mean higher electricity and gas prices. What about the households that won't be able to afford higher bills?
That's a key issue for us, and indeed one that we're asked to consider under the Climate Change Act. And what we've done is, first of all, look at what would happen to fuel poverty in a world where we didn't care about carbon. And what we see there is, as incomes rise and as energy prices come down from levels of the last few months, that we would go from the current 3.6 or 7 million households in fuel poverty to about 2 million in 2020. Now, if you then say we are going to tackle climate change, that will put bills back up. We've estimated that it could push about 1.7 million households back into fuel poverty, so to take us in 2020 back to the current level of households in fuel poverty. Now, the key thing is here, that has to be addressed. There are different ways to address it. One is to improve energy efficiency of fuel-poor households. We estimate that could take 400,000 households back out of fuel poverty. And we also estimate that the cost of addressing all impacts on the fuel poor is of the order of £500 million, which is relatively small, particularly when you compare it to some of the fiscal benefits that the government will enjoy as a result of tackling climate change.